The Dvar Torah for Vayishlach, Genesis chapter 32, verse 4 to Genesis 36, verse 43, and I am Rabbi Robbie Harris. The opening verses of this week's parasha begin with Jacob's decision, upon returning home after 20 years of living abroad, to get in touch with his brother Esau. You may remember that they had not parted on the best of terms. And if you want, go back to Genesis 25, verse 27 to 34, and especially Genesis 27, verses 1 to 41 for the gritty details. At this point in the narrative, it is not yet clear to what extent Jacob is motivated by fear, by friendliness, by craftiness, or by some combination of these and potentially other concerns. Let us read the first two verses of the portion, Genesis 32, verses 4 through 5. Jacob sent messengers ahead to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom, and instructed them as follows. Thus shall you say, to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob, I stayed with Laban and remained until now. I would like us to focus on the phrase, I stayed with Laban. Literally, with Laban have I sojourned. The Hebrew phrase is im lavan garti. But for the moment, let us think of that last word untranslated and consider the phrase as, I had been a ger. I wish us to think of the words in this way because that is how Rashi begins his explanation of the passage as follows. I have sojourned, Hebrew, garti. I did not become an officer or a dignitary, but a stranger, a ger. It is not worthwhile for you, Esau, to hate me, Jacob, on account of your father's blessings with which he blessed me. Genesis 27, verse 29, quote, you shall be a master over your brothers, end quote. For it was not fulfilled in me. You see, in this first comment, midrashically derived, Rashi understands the Hebrew verb garti as I have lived as a sojourner or I have lived as a stranger, not as the word means according to context, I stayed or I lived. Note also that Rashi does not apply the rabbi's typical, a.k.a. midrashic, understanding of biblical Hebrew ger as meaning convert or proselyte, which meaning, of course, cannot apply here. So here, Rashi would have us understand the verse as containing Jacob's admission that the material rewards contained in Isaac's blessing that Jacob had stolen from his brother did not pan out. Jacob is returning to the land as he left, a refugee, and one fearful of his brother's justified reprisals at that. But Rashi's second comment, even farther from the contextual or plain meaning, is what, for some reason, intrigues me here even more. He writes, another explanation, garti has the numerical value of 613. That is to say, I lived garti with the wicked Laban, but I kept the 613 commandments, and I did not learn from his evil deeds. For the moment, the question of how could any character in Genesis observe the Torah when God's revelation at Mount Sinai did not take place until Exodus chapter 20, this is a trifling matter in the world of Midrash. Here, Rashi, via the Midrash, points out that the biblical word garti has the same letters and hence the same numerical value as the traditional number of the Torah's commandments, taryag, or 613. Now, whenever one turns to gematria, the number games based on numerical values of Hebrew letters, one ought to keep in mind the warning of Rabbi Abraham Ibn Ezra against ever going this route. Ibn Ezra offers a stinging rebuke against those who would use gematria in his comment on Genesis 14:14 at the very end. He writes, Scripture does not speak in gematria, for if it did, whoever wishes may change the meaning of any word for good or evil. In other words, one may have recourse to gematria only as a game. It is never the actual meaning of a text, because language, even and especially divine language in Torah, simply does not work that way. Rather, we should always apply the rabbinic rule for reading. Scripture never escapes the hold of its context. In Hebrew, Ein mikra yotzei midei pishuto. In other words, when reading Torah, as opposed to, say, being a darshan of Torah, the text primarily means just what it says it means. Nonetheless, when I read Rashi's second interpretation of the words, "With Laban have I sojourned," I want to know, what was in the mind of the darshan who first proposed this gematria? Why would he suppose Jacob would think that Esau would be reassured by his claim that while living with Laban, he, Jacob, had kept the mitzvot? We cannot know for certain, of course, because the Midrash does not generally give us the mindset of the authors of the various Midrashic interpretations. However, we can ponder the question and intuit an answer. Shaky grounds, I know. Perhaps the Darshan wishes us to think that Jacob, seeking to reconcile himself with the brother whom he has earlier wounded, at the very least approaches Esau sympathetically. Guilt feelings, perhaps? As though the latter, living in the land all during the time that Jacob lived abroad in Aram, kept the commandments himself and would have been concerned that Jacob had not been loyal to the covenant while in exile. You might say that my reasoning is far-fetched, a wonderful Yiddish word. But hey, we're living in the world of gematria. Everything is far-fetched there. Let's leave it as a question then. For some reason or another, the Darshan, whose teaching underlies Rashi's second comment, has Jacob reassuring Esau that he, Jacob, has kept a mitzvot while away. What do you suppose the reason was? Shabbat Shalom.